Sometimes I've caught myself wanting to tell my son, but you can place anybody's name there, why they're wrong, while they're telling you why they're right.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, hurry up.
so I can tell you why you're wrong.
Today's episode is sponsored by HEB Curbside and Delivery. When life throws you a loop, HEB Curbside and Delivery is here to help. We shop how you shop, so you get exactly what you want. Order today at HEB.com. HEB Curbside and Delivery, it's never been easier to shop HEB.
Welcome to today's episode of Our Voices Matter. I am thrilled to have one of my very dear friends, Jerry Lasko, here. Jerry is the CEO of Lasko Enterprises, which is basically a restaurant group.
That's right.
And that has just caught on fire here in the Houston area. Tasting Room, Max's Wine Dive are the signature properties, and it's just such a pleasure to have you here, Jerry.
Well, thanks. It's a thrill, Linda. I've loved you and Lou and appreciated your work and your contributions to Houston and society in general for a long time. So
well,
I'm honored to be here.
Thank you. And so Jerry and your beautiful wife, Laura, who is also the attorney for Lasko Enterprises, right? The counsel.
She really runs the show.
It's all Laura, right?
Pretty much.
Okay. So you hear that, Laura? He's giving you props. So it's wonderful to see how you guys have grown the company. How old now is Tasting Room Uptown Park here in Houston? Was the first one.
That's correct.
What year?
So it opened in 2003.
Okay.
So it's had its 16th birthday and it's on its 17th year of business.
Okay. So before we get into all the great things that are going on with the business, I know a little bit about your backstory, and I want you to share that, because you have not, like you said, only been in the business for 16 years. What were you doing before that, and what changed your trajectory?
Right out of high school, I followed my dad's footsteps and went into the military. I went to the Air Force Academy, spent 4 years there, then off to pilot training, and flew in the Air Force as a pilot for 10 years. Decided to get out of the Air Force, start a family, and I got hired by Continental Airlines. I spent a few years in New York with my wife because that was the junior base. As soon as we were senior enough to hold Houston, we thought, what a great place to raise a family. We had connections to Texas. I spent most of my career in Texas, and my parents had retired in Texas, so we moved back here. Now, that's where the timing gets interesting, because that was about 2 weeks before 9/11 happened. So I was still based out of New York. I flew to Newark to catch one of my trips. I was commuting. I got back on September 10th. I'm watching the news on the morning of September 11th, like so much of America, and watched how the events of 9/11 unfurled. And that was literally the last day I worked at Continental. By October 1st, CEO of Continental announced that they were furloughing, 20% of the pilot force, because the airline industry was just decimated at that point in time. So it was kind of a bitter pill to swallow, but I knew that, we'd rebound as a country and, the airline business would rebound. So I wasn't let go. I was just furloughed, meaning no more paycheck. And during that time, I had to figure out what to do. We had just bought a house here in Houston and a couple cars. We were moving from New York, so we didn't have a lot of those things. And all businesses were suffering. My wife's business, she was an attorney for the same company that she was working for in New York. They shortly thereafter declared bankruptcy. So we were really trying to figure out what we wanted to do. And she was great because she said, Jerry, you've always wanted to be an entrepreneur. Why don't you use this time to start a business? So with that in mind, I had to figure out, all right, what kind of business am I going to start? Literally, I remember sitting at the counter brainstorming. I'd have a list of things that I could do. And as I'd go through the list, I realized I'm not really qualified to do any of these things. Kind of have an engineering background from college, but I'm not going to go there. And my only real job has been flying planes, and there's no industry for that. So I started looking at what I was passionate about, what I loved to do, and I loved food and wine. I had been studying both when I was in New York just for fun. I had been going to culinary school, and I had also got my sommelier certification. So it was just a hobby to me and loved to travel. So I thought, all right, maybe try to turn a hobby into a business. And that was the birth of the Tasting Room.
Unbelievable story. Just incredible. So I want to go back to 9/11 just for a moment, because as you were talking, I started just, you know, picturing that whole time. And what a horrific, obviously horrible tragedy that we went through as a nation. But in the immediate aftermath of that, we came together as a nation, as a people.
Yeah.
And it was really beautiful to see how we did. When you think back to that time, and then you fast forward to where we are today, being so divided, what thoughts do you have?
Well, it's a great question, but I think your observation is spot on. I think America has always done well coming together or uniting over a cause. If you look at, and unfortunately, some of those causes have been wars in the past, World War I, World War II, not Vietnam War. You skip Vietnam and Korea, and then you go really to 9/11. But they were uniters, and unfortunately, it's like sometimes families say, boy, it's good to have the whole family back. Let's not wait for a funeral or something to get us there. So it's a negative event that gets everybody. I think the trick is finding that common bond with your neighbor, whether or not you're agreeing on everything. You do have a common bond and a common cause that's worth fighting for.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And so I'm wondering how you now, as the CEO of Lasco Enterprises, and how many properties are you managing now?
Nine.
And you in Texas, in Colorado, and just those two states?
Just those two states.
Okay. And so you've got your hands full. From a leadership perspective, how do you ensure that the culture of your company, and I know you're all about people. I know you well enough to know that, yeah, about how people are treated. As the leader of the company, how do you manage any kind of divisions or conflicts that might be going on as a result of where we are as a country right now? Have you had any experiences with that?
Well, to start with your first question, or the first part of your question, I think respect is critical. We have our core values, and we talk about our core values, and we try to drum those in when we're hiring people, but we also try to live them. And we talk a lot about treating people with respect. So the quickest way to get fired in our company is to break one of our core values or not treat people with respect. We just don't tolerate it.
Whether, and what are those core values?
Well, the critical aspects of our core values are honesty, you know, trusting each other. You know, first and foremost, if you don't have that trust one way or the other in a relationship, it's going to deteriorate. We talk about being a problem solver, being a team player, that's a big core value, and being the best. And really being the best is the best that you can be, the best that we can be, coming to work every day, no matter what your challenge is, whether you're, you had a hard day or whatnot, you've got to provide the best that you can possibly provide to the guest when you're inside of our four walls. And a lot of times in our company, there's a transitional element to our staff. If you think about, we have close to 500 employees, and a lot of them are servers, so they're our front lines. They deal with the guests. They're the ones that make that experience either exceptional or less than exceptional. And a lot of them aren't professional servers. In other words, it's not in their game plan to be in this job 10 years from now, mm-hmm, or 5 years from now. maybe even 5 months from now. They might be going to school, they might be doing this or working on a second career. And our philosophy has always been, that's fantastic and we will support you, we'll help you to achieve your own personal goals. However, no matter where you're at in life, you're gonna do a lot better if you give everything that you have to the task at hand. So that's what we ask people. Treat everybody with respect, starting with our guests, starting with the person right next to you and spreading that around, and then give your all while you're with us. When you leave us, we'll wish you the absolute best in your next journey in life. But
Going back to a little bit farther back now than your career as a pilot, I know you grew up in Southern Illinois, not actually that far from my husband. You and Lou have had some great conversations about that part of the country and growing up. So give our audience a sense of your childhood and your background and what was it that was instilled in you that has made you who you are today in terms of how you show up in the world and how you're able to lead your company with the core values that you just described for us?
Well, I think that, you know, while I grew up in a pretty hectic environment, and what I mean by that, my first 7 years of school, I had gone to at least 8, maybe 10 different schools for my first seventh grades. My dad was a military officer and we traveled a lot. So there were challenges. You know, I think back on my mom, you know, sometimes raising kids single-handedly, 3 kids, and he did 2 long tours in Vietnam and other remote assignments and whatnot. But there were similar core values as we grew up. You know, sometimes people talk about Midwestern values or whatnot, which I think are great, but I think they're shared throughout the world. I don't think it's the Midwest or even the United States. Those are values that are oftentimes common elements to, you know, just society out there, people, no matter where you're growing up. But one of the things that I always respected is the military. The military really taught the whole, you've got to get the most out of people as a leader. And to get the most out of people, you have to give. You know, there's that give and take relationship. They have to trust you. You know, there's old school military doctrine, leaders that commanded through fear. But the military has learned the lesson, and I think companies have learned that lesson too these days. If you read, you know, the new books out there, that it's much better to lead through respect and through trust. And I think my father was that type of leader. He was pretty soft-spoken, at least until, you know, you got him angry enough. But he treated people with respect, and that was a good example. And my mother, of course, you know, believed in that philosophy as well. So,
what are the values? I know you've got two growing boys,
that's right,
and you and Laura are raising. What are you saying to them as I'm sure they must be paying attention and asking questions about what's going on in the country right now in terms of how we're talking to each other and
right,
in many ways it's, or many times it's not with respect.
Right.
How are you answering their questions and what are they asking you?
So I have two boys, Jack and Max. Jack's the youngest, and Jack's what I would say is more like myself and maybe typical kids. He's thinking about sports and girls in school and having fun, mm-hmm, and not so much politics. Now, on the very opposite extreme, Max, my oldest son, he wants to be president of the United States.
Really?
And that is his stated goal. And I think to myself,
that
certainly wasn't my goal when I was his age. That
wow,
thought never crossed my mind. So with him, it's funny because he's a 16-year-old and he's very astute. Politics is his hobby. He doesn't follow sports, but he could tell you everything in the world politically and economically. You know, reads the Wall Street Journal every single day. And I think the biggest thing that I have for him is to be open-minded, not think that you know it all, and be respectful of other opinions. We call it listening with your heart instead of your head or your ego sometimes. So he might not like the fact that I'm saying this on the air, but it's really about listening to other people's perspectives and not thinking that you have the answer right away. I tell him this is the time in life that you want to be a sponge and hear as much as you possibly can out there. And there's always time to formulate opinions. There's nothing wrong with formulating opinions, but A, you're not always going to be right, and B, there's other people out there that are going to be right as well. And how do you work on, how do you get to a common goal, even if you feel like you have opposing views?
Yeah, yeah. Do you ever have political discussions with him and kind of spar back and forth?
Just about every day.
How does that go?
Well, it's interesting. You know, I'll say this, our politics at this point do not align fully. And likewise in our house, you know, we're not all voting the same right now, which I think is great. I mean, I really do. From my perspective, I'm completely okay with that. You know, the homogenous, there's one solution concept, I think rarely gets the best product. You know, you want brains and you want thought from everyone out mm-hmm. there. So mm-hmm. I'm just trying to nurture an environment that is open-minded and maybe uses good reasoning and not emotion and not ego in the political conversations.
Yeah. It's so interesting. Your family's not unlike many. I mean, although I will say I've heard a lot of horror stories about families that are not politically aligned,
right.
But also aren't talking to each other, which is sad.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I mean, so clearly, you know, you're at a point where you embrace the differences and you have healthy debate, but at the end of the day, of course, you're still talking and you love each other, so.
Right, and I think that's a tough pill for a lot of people to swallow. It's the feeling that there's so much animosity and vitriolic discussion towards concepts that you create enemies out of anyone that doesn't believe the same thing that you believe in. And that's been going on. That goes on in any country, under every government. And it started off that way, mm-hmm. you know, in our country, and it's that way still. However, I think right now we've got that challenge that there's a momentum behind it that is building up steam. I'm not really a podcast guy. In fact, I'm new to the podcast world. I probably listened to my first podcast, I don't know, in the last 60 days. But I remember hearing something on one of Oprah's podcasts where she talked about how that was a big lesson for her to learn in life, and she called it the ego. And she'd hear somebody say something, and she would immediately get defensive and start saying, you know, that's wrong, and that's in wanting to correct. And that's a natural instinct, I think, that we have. When we hear something that we don't believe in, mm-hmm. we start getting, and she said, soon as I would start feeling that feeling where I'm getting worked up and I want to explain to the other person why they're wrong, I realized I had to check my ego, because that was an attachment. The ego is an attachment to a belief, attachment to a possession, attachment on how you see yourself or how you see the world. So she had to work on letting that go. And while she's not saying, and I'm not saying, that I have to believe what everybody else has to believe, you know, having your own beliefs is very important in life, I don't have to be so attached to it that we're going to be bitter enemies and start screaming at each other in the conversation, and society is going to devolve because of it.
Exactly. And you have to, when that feeling comes up where you want to jump in, your ego wants to jump in and defend whatever it is that your point of view. Sometimes if you just stop yourself long enough to finish listening to what the other person has to say without getting your talking points lined up to refute, it makes a difference. Would you agree with that?
And we have that conversation a lot. Let's listen. And we're all guilty of it. I'm guilty of mm-hmm. it. In fact, I think part of leading, even part of being a parent, is leading by example. So sometimes I've caught myself wanting to tell my son, but you can place anybody's name there, why they're wrong, while they're telling you why they're right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Hurry up.
so I can tell you why you're wrong. I know. We all tend to do that. I know that one of the things that you do to help keep yourself centered is meditate.
Yeah.
Are you still meditating?
I am.
Every day?
Every day.
What started your meditation?
I think a time of personal growth. You know, we all go through these periods in life where you look in the mirror or, you know, you're feeling stress and anxiety or things inside of you aren't going the way that you wanted them to be, and you've got to figure out a path to deal with it and a path to evolve. It's kind of the evolve or devolve mentality. You know, which way is this going to go? And so started this process really, I guess, out of a feeling of a bit of necessity, and continue it now because it works. You know, I believe in it, and I feel the benefits from it. Hard to describe because they're not black and white like flipping on a switch, mm-hmm. but you know, you can feel it.
So when you say it works, what do you mean?
Well, I think it makes me more centered as an individual, and probably allows me to focus on things like I've been talking about, like getting the ego out of a conversation and being a better listener, maybe being a better parent, being a better leader, being the best that I can be.
Maybe that's something that we should be fostering among the entire population, so that we can all be better listeners and kind of get our egos out of the way when it's time to have a conversation that might be a little tough to have.
Well, interestingly, it's trending.
Yeah.
You know, you're reading about meditation all the time. It's been about 4 or 5 years for me, and you know, it's one of those weird things that you never perfect. Yeah, Laura and I were having this conversation yesterday, and I was saying something like, it's just a shame sometimes that you can't, you know, get to a point and be done with something. You know, like if you're evolving as a person or coming to grips with something in mm-hmm. your life, you can get to the point where you've put in the effort and now it's
okay,
done. Yeah. And then it becomes easy at that point. But I don't think it works that way. I think it's, you know, a lifelong process.
So as you take a look at the landscape now and the business and operating the business in this landscape, are you optimistic, pessimistic, somewhere in the middle? What's your take?
Well, I'm a true optimist, and I think most entrepreneurs are, because you put a lot on the line to get something, and every day, and eventually some point in a road, you realize there might have been an easier path than starting all of these restaurants or doing this, because it's a crazy and it's a hectic environment, and what was true yesterday is not true today. Those people that were on your team yesterday might not be on your team today. There's all kinds of, you know, crazy variables. In the military, we call it the fog and friction of the war. And it's the mm-hmm. stuff that you can't plan for. Mm-hmm. So that chaos creates stress and anxiety. So, you know, that's a given in our world that there is all of that. So you really have to build yourself and your team and the mentalities around you to be flexible with the chaos and change. And I think that the human element to that, if you can have a competitive advantage, and your competitive advantage is you've built a strong culture, and you've built a group of leaders. You know, when I say leaders, I mean anybody that's in the building, no matter what position they have. If you built a group of leaders that can handle that chaos and handle it with grace, you know, under pressure, then that can be your advantage. And that's really something that we push for a lot. So long answer, I'm an optimist. it's a challenging environment. It's the most challenging environment that we've seen since, you know, in the last 16 years that we've been in that. And we've ridden through some recessions. You know, I think about sometimes a restaurant that we had to shut down in Yeho. A lot of things were going well for us up to that point in time, and it was going to be our, you know, our biggest deal. It was going to be our biggest and best restaurant investment that we ever put into. And we opened that, and we put a lot of money and, you know, to be honest, a lot of ego went into that. We wanted the best of everything, and that was, you know, Jerry Lasker from the top down. I want the best meats. I want the best of this. I want that. And we're going to go out there. Well, those conversations were being had when oil was, you know, 110, 120 bucks a barrel, you know, at its peak. And then about the time we're opening, you know, it's cruising down, yeah, you know, through the 30s and, you know, into the 20s. So we've ridden through some tough spells, but the landscape, just business-wise in the restaurant industry, has gotten more challenging because the revenues haven't gone up and the profits haven't gone up as fast as the cost and the challenges and whatnot. So it's a...
Is that a direct... What do you attribute that to? Is that just kind of the natural cycle of the business, or is it related to what the economic landscape as it exists now?
It's a great question. I think it's a little bit of everything. I think there's the paradigm has changed in so many different ways. Consumer habits are different. You know, when we started out, this whole marketing thing and the social media and the people advertised, but they did it, you know, by buying an ad in a newspaper or a magazine. You know, but that's all changed. People eat in a lot more. As an industry, we're still trying to figure out this delivery thing. It's very expensive on the restaurant side. It's expensive on the guest side. However, it's the reality, and I think we're moving towards more of that. So as business people, we've got to try to stay ahead of the curve. And, you know, sometimes you stay ahead of the curve. Sometimes it whips around and hits you in the butt as you've missed it, which mm-hmm. propels you a little bit forward.
Right.
But, you know, new challenges, and, you know, not everybody's going to survive those challenges. It's like everything else. You've got to be smart, and you've got to be willing to adapt. And I think what I'm trying to say more than anything is it's a period of adaptation. You have mm-hmm. to be ready for what's next.
Got to be nimble.
And that's life in our future. You know, what's AI going to do to business? What's next? And, you know, some companies will figure that out, and some won't. If you don't, probably won't be around too much longer.
Do you miss flying?
I do. You know, I particularly miss the military flying. That was a lot of fun. My buddies are, a lot of my classmates from the academy and from flying in the Air Force are still flying, and they're still in the business. And it wasn't a smooth road. You know, there were furloughs, you know, in just about every business, and, you know, challenging times. And sometimes you can look at a lifestyle and think the grass is greener on the other side of the fence. And I know sometimes they've looked at ours and thought, you know, Jerry, it must be great being able to go to those restaurants and everything. And I was just explaining to someone, a mom of our director of operations, because he took his mother to one of our restaurants. And I said, you know, Laura and I have kind of learned that the date night to one of our restaurants is not always the best date night. Because we're both sitting there going, uh-oh, you know, we're seeing that, and nobody's focused on,
you got to go,
you know,
to somebody else's
That's
restaurant
right.
on date night.
Yeah.
You cannot go to one of your own.
Amen.
Yeah. I've been to enough with you to know that it's not really a date night.
right. You're always working there.
So last couple questions. When you look back, maybe to your teenage self, what would you say to that young boy who was growing up, now that you have been through all that you've been through and achieved the success and gone through the ups and downs and are still, you know, living your best life, to quote Oprah, okay? Right. What would you say to your teenage self?
Well, I have this conversation a lot because I have teenagers.
Yes, you
so,
do.
So I try to have it. I think looking back on my life, I would say, you know, put in that little bit extra effort. And I, you know, my kids are both runners, so they're running cross country right now. And I played a lot of sports, but I was never a runner. But running is one of those things where you have to overcome pain. You have to, so it's just as much, you know, between the ears mm-hmm. as it is physically. So physically, they've got the tools, they've got all that. They were blessed from that perspective. Now it's a matter of how hard are they willing to work, and what are they willing to push themselves through, put themselves through. And I think, looking back, I always wish I could go back and do it again. And I would have learned a little more, I would have worked a little harder, mm-hmm. I would have played just as hard as well.
Yeah.
I always got the playing down right, but mm-hmm. you know, I would have, and my favorite quote is, life is either a great adventure or nothing. A Helen Keller quote. And I literally reminded myself that, you know, just about every day, because it's crazy out there, but you have to appreciate the adventure. And, you know, so I'm a go for it guy. Don't, a Babe Ruth quote that I like, don't let the fear of striking out keep you from swinging for the fence.
Well, I can't think of a better place to end this conversation. Just, I knew I would love sitting and chatting with you this way. I mean, even though we've been friends for years, but I learned some things about you today that I didn't know.
Oh,
so
yeah,
I did. And I really, it's refreshing to, you know, to be able to sit and talk to a CEO of a company that can just, you know, be who you are and share your truth and your experiences. And I really just appreciate you taking the time. Thank you.
You're very welcome. I'm a big admirer of yours, Linda. So your inspiration is, you know, lives inside of me. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks so much, Jerry. And thank you all for taking the time to watch and listen, and for giving Jerry permission to speak, and for having the courage to listen with an open mind and an open heart. Yes?
That's right.
That's right. Okay. Thanks so much. We'll see you next time.